Well, good morning. I'll tell you a little bit about my research, my master's research project with nitrous oxide on corn, varying with different nitrogen sources and placements. So, well, we all know that nitrogen is very reactive when in soil. So let's just take a look at why we're looking at this. So when we apply fertilizer, in this case, urea-based fertilizer, and especially on the soil surface, it can be lost as ammonia volatilization. And if this fertilizer gets incorporated either by rain or tillage, it's in a equilibrium reaction with ammonia. So now this ammonia is a plant uptake, it's a plant available form. And under aerobic conditions, you undergo nitrification, it gets transformed into nitrate. Now nitrate, it's a molecule that's more prone to losses, so it can be lost by leaching. Well, it's also a plant available form, but it can be lost by leaching, and under anaerobic conditions, it can get transformed into nitrous oxide, N2O, or dinitrogen, N2, and this process is called denitrification. So, but why are we looking at nitrous oxide? Well, the main source of nitrous oxide are fertilizer agricultural fields, and that represents about 75% of all that type of emission in the U.S. It represents an economic loss. It varies a lot depending on the system, and varies from 0.5 to 15% of the applied fertilizer, and it usually tends to be on the lower range of that, lower end of that range. And it's also it has a negative environmental impact. So it's it has about 300 times more global warming potential than CO2, and it's also a ozone layer depleting agent. So with that, we wanted to know how different end fertilizer sources and placements would impact both nitrous oxide losses, but also grain yield and no-till corn. Well, this experiment was conducted in Manhattan, Kansas, on a Kennebec seal loam. We did that for two growing seasons, 2013-2014. It was a randomized complete block design with four blocks. And we had seven treatments that consisted of specific combinations between nitrogen source and nitrogen placement. So for the source, we had urea, we had coated urea, and urea ammonium nitrate. And for the placement, we had broadcast, surface band, and subsurface band. We applied 168 kilograms of N per hectare, and we measure cumulative nitrous oxide emissions and grain yield. And data was analyzed in SAS 9.3 using proclimics, and all pairwise comparisons were performed with Fisher's LSD at alpha 0.05. So let's take a look at these treatments and how they were applied. We had control that did not receive any N fertilizer. We had subsurface band UAN with and without nitrification inhibitor. This is a picture so you can see how it was applied. We had surface band UAN, broadcast UAN, and then broadcast urea and coated urea that were hand applied. The gas sampling, well, you can see here a picture of the chamber and the dimensions of the chamber. We took three sampling points, 0, 20, and 40 minutes after deployment. And we took this N2O samples at each one of those times, and we took those samples to the lab to analyze in the electron capture detector equipped gas chromatograph. And with those concentrations over time, we did a flux calculation using linear regression. So let's take a look at the daily fluxes for both years. So here you, on your y-axis, you have the grams of N2O per hectare per day. And on your x-axis, we have day of a year. And the arrow represents the date that we planted and applied fertilizer. And on the top, we have the precipitation information. So you can read that on your x top axis. Sorry, y top axis. And, well, we see that there is this window here right after fertilizer application that we saw most of the fluxes, and that's very typical. It's about 30 to 45 days right after you applied fertilizer, you have your main peaks. And so in 2014, it was a little bit different because, and I want to call your attention to the scale on the y-axis, that in 2013, it goes up to 120, whereas in 2014, it goes up to 250. And you can also see on the 2014 graph on the precipitation part, we can see that how it was a way wetter spring in 2014 compared to 2013. And that wetter spring gave higher losses for all treatments. And we also saw the main peaks coming out, you know, in that window of 30 to 45 days after fertilizer application. And also, we had some fluxes that were outside that window. And you can see there, and it's coming mainly from the subsurface band UAN and from the broadcast coated urea. And, well, here's just a table with the precipitation, and we can see how, especially in the month of June, how we had significantly more rainfall in 2014 compared to 2013. All right, so getting to our response variables of interest, cumulative emissions and grain yield, we can see that both treatment, ear, and the interaction between them were significant. And so let's break this ears again and see where their interaction is coming from. So in 2013, we can see that subsurface band UAN was the one that emitted the most. It was about 2.4 kilograms of NN2O per hectare, and it was higher than all the other treatments. And well, we have lots of treatments here, but one thing that's it's interesting to look at is how did the subsurface band UAN with and without nitrification inhibitor behaved. So this reduction was 62%. So nitrification inhibitor did actually reduce the emissions when it was applied with UAN. Now in 2014, because of that wetter spring and higher fluxes, we can see that, well, we had more emissions for almost all treatments, and also the slope of this curve is more, it goes faster, and we can see that in 2014, all treatments emitted statistically the same, but the subsurface band UAN with nitrification inhibitor. So in a wetter year, we did not see any difference, but with the treatment with nitrification inhibitor. So showing that nitrification inhibitor is playing the role, whether it's a drier year or a wetter year. And on 2014, the difference between the subsurface band UAN with and without nitrification inhibitor was 55%, but this was not significant because of the higher variability that we observed. And now when we look at one treatment across different years, we see that the broadcast treatment, so broadcast urea, coated urea, and UAN, were the ones that emitted significantly more in 2014. That was a wetter year. And also this shaded area here is showing you the main period of emissions. And we see how in 2014 that was shorter, but it was more intense compared to 2013. All right, let's take a look at the corn grain yields and see how that was. So in 2013, the surface applied UAN treatments were all the highest yielding treatments, and they were in between 10 and 9 megagrams of grain per hectare. Whereas in 2014, even though it was a wetter year, but the timing was not quite right. And so overall grain yields were lower in 2014, and also we did not see the same pattern. So basically, all treatments yielded the same, but the subsurface band UAN with nitrification inhibitor, that was a lower yielding treatment for 2014. And now when we look across the same treatment across different years, we'd see that the surface band treatments were the ones that yielded significantly less in 2014 compared to 2013. So with that, we can say that nitrogen fertilizer source and placement have an impact on nitrous oxide emissions, and we can use that to mitigate it, although it's variable depending on the climate, especially rainfall pattern right after fertilizer application. However, nitrification inhibitor worked well in both years, both situations, and it is an alternative for trying to match nitrogen supply and demand. And it's really important to relate losses and yield, because we see that if you just look at the loss part, you may be losing the very important component that's the yield, and we definitely don't want to compromise yields and just looking at the losses, so we do have to look at both together. With that, I'll thank you, and I'll take questions if you have.
Please come to the microphone.
What kind of nitrification material?
It was an instinct insert. Yes.
What brand?
Yeah, it's a polymer coated urea, ESN.
ESN, okay.
Yes.
Hi, thanks for a nice talk. You used the nitrification inhibitor, but you didn't collect N2O after 300 days or something like that?
Yeah.
Since you had a lower N2O emission, could it be that, I know there's some studies showing that nitrification inhibitors, I think I'll start over again. Thanks for the nice talk. I was wondering if you have any indication of whether the nitrification inhibitor might have led to a release of nitrogen
after you stop measuring that. Yeah, so we did measure residual nitrate up to 90 centimeter depth, and we did see a treatment effect, but it was numerically, it was very little, although it was a treatment effect. We saw and there was no difference between the two subsurface bend UA and treatments, but just so you have an idea, the treatment effect and the residual nitrate, the treatment that had the most was 4 kilograms per hectare, and the treatment that had the least was 2. So it was statistically different, but numerically it's very small. So yeah, we didn't observe that pattern of later release of nitrogen.
Explain why you think that the subsurface banding caused greater nitrous oxide release, and then I didn't quite catch what depth that was at, and would you speculate what would happen if maybe you placed this at a deeper depth?
Yeah, so the subsurface band UAN was applied at 10 centimeter depth, and we could see that when we were banding it, we had higher emissions. We think that's because you're concentrating that fertilizer in a smaller area, so you're increasing that high concentration of fertilizer, a very, very small area. And also something that we didn't measure but I did observe in the field is that after rainfall events, that slit that's created in the soil was kind of funneling down water. So that may be also an indication that the water content in that slit has been higher than if you don't have that slit.
Well, thank you very much.